live.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Okay. Actually, want to maybe a little closer to Gopinath, too. Because the bass is really cool that he's playing. You're a good mother.
She's teaching me.
Krishna fulfilled your desire. It's
nice. Nandarani, Hari Bol. Thank you so much.
Nandarani is very happy now. She's glowing. And he's a good father.
Hopefully. Yeah, this way I can see them both. That's okay.
So the story of this song, some of you heard me play it before. The story of this song, once upon a time, many years ago, when Lord Vamanadeva was present on the planet.
She gets it under it.
Lord Vamanadeva did something that really agitated Shukracharya. That he took his best disciple away from him. And he took everything from Shukracharya's best disciple and pushed it down the Pataloka. And Shukracharya tried to interfere with everything. And Shukracharya lost his eye as a result. You know this story? The Shukracharya went into the little pot or the container which he was trying to pour to signify the benediction. And Lord Vamanadeva took a little piece of kusha grass and put his eye out. So that's how the story goes. Starts. And then what happened is that Shukracharya decided to interfere with the Lord's pastimes whenever the Lord appears. And so he understood the Lord was appearing in Kali Yuga. And so he thought, let me interfere with Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And so he took birth in Puri, I believe. And he invented a mantra that runs counter to the mantra or our understanding of the philosophy of Sankirtan. His mantra is that you should not chant Hare Krishna loudly. Just chant Hare Krishna when you're doing japa, but don't chant it loudly. Did you know that mantra? So his mantra is Baja Gaur Nitai Gaur Radesham Hare Krishna Japa Hare Krishna Hare Rama. Japa Hare Krishna Hare Rama. So that's the meaning of that mantra. Worship Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. However, just chant Hare Krishna and japa, don't chant it out loud. So that's a bogus mantra. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so upset with that person who was teaching the bogus mantra in Jagannath Puri that he opposed him in a public debate. And this person was very popular. He's an incarnation of Shukracharya, actually. He was very popular. And there was a riot in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life was threatened, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to take him out of Jagannath Puri as a result of that. So, not take the bogus guy out of Jagannath Puri, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur out of Jagannath Puri, because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life was being threatened. So, but this guy still continued, the incarnation of Shukracharya still continued to do his nonsense. And he opened up so-called temples in different places. And one of the temples he opened up was right next to or behind our Krishna Balaram Mandir. Did you know this? And right next to the guest house in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And so they chant all night long, Vaja Nitai Gaur Radesham Japa Hare Krishna Hare Ram. And they don't chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So it's very frustrating. So Prabhupada, being very upset with this particular individual and his bogus mantra, Prabhupada wanted to distinguish our Panchatattva mantra from this bogus mantra. So Prabhupada changed the introductory word in the Panchatattva mantra. Because when Prabhupada first started the Krishna Consciousness Movement, The Pad Chautauqua Mahamantra was Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Govinda. So in order so the people would not confuse the two mantras, he chanted it to Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Govinda. And the Prabhupada also said, you can add a second Jai there too if you want. Yeah, Jai Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Govinda. So, therefore, Prabhupada was very upset, and so much so that he changed the first word of the Panchatattva Mantra. He didn't actually change the Panchatattva Mantra, he changed the introductory word. In other words, you can't change a mantra, but you could change the introductory word. Because the word bhaja means to worship. Therefore, you should worship Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Dvaita Gadadhara, and Srivas. So, and then Prabhupada said, if you really want to chant a mantra with bhaja in front of it, if you're really attached to it, you can chant the names of the deities in Vrindavan. So, Nitai Gaur Radhesham, right? Jai Krishna Balaram. So Prabhupada said, we'll do this. Nitai Gaur Radhesham Jai Krishna Balaram. So, I made up a song based upon that mantra which Srila Prabhupada gave us. It's not the bogus mantra. It's a mantra which Srila Prabhupada said. It's the names of the deities. I know people have criticized me for chanting this before. But it's the names of the deities in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir. Nitai Gaur Radhesham Jai Krishna Balaram. Okay? And so then I added a few English words. Like, anyway, I didn't say bhaja. So I added a few English words, which I don't remember them all right now. But we'll chant a few of the English verses. And it starts off with, happiness is so far from me in this world of misery. Seen everything and been everywhere. All one sees is despair. Then Prabhupada from Goloka came to give us Krishna's holy name, sent to us by Lord Chaitanya. He came to give us Premananda. And then chant Hare Krishna, and you'll be free and leave this world of misery. How's that? How about that? Jai Gaur Radhesham, Jai Krishna Balaram. Jai Gaur Radhesham, Jai Krishna Balaram. Jai Gaur Radhesham, Jai Krishna Balaram. So far from me in this world of misery. Happiness is so far from me in this world of misery. Seen everything and been everywhere. All one sees is despair. Jai Gaur Radhesham, Jai Krishna Balaram. Nitai Gaur Radhesham, Jai Krishna Balaram. Prabhupada from the Goloka came, give us Krishna's holy name. Chant Hare Krishna, you'll be free. Leave this world of misery. Chant Hare Krishna, you'll be free.
Hare Krishna, Hare
one of we have some Krishna guitar. So, does anyone have any subject matter they'd like to hear about or questions?
We're not again.
Politics.
No.
How to water the seed of devotion in your heart?
Okay. That's an interesting question. How to water the seed of devotion. First of all, you've got to have the seed. There's an interesting description in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma about bhakti. He has many interesting descriptions in there. And there's a conversation between some ritualistic brahmanas and a pure devotee, sannyasi, whose name is Vaishnava Das Babaji. You may be familiar with the story. Anyway.
Jiva Dharma.
So they're saying, actually, let me tell the story a little bit. What happened is, there is one new devotee who just joined them, and he's very enthusiastic. His guru is Vaishnava Das, and he's very enthusiastic, nice devotee, and his family members, they're ritualistic brahmanas. So they came to see their father. You know, sons came to see the father. And when they came to see the father, they were impressed first with the erudition of the Vaishnavas. But then they saw something that shocked them to death almost. That the Vaishnavas were treating the Muslim Qazi with great respect, and they were having a philosophical discussion with him. And this Qazi was a descendant of the Nawab, who got the mercy from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nawab Hussein Shah. So anyway, this Qazi was a descendant. And he had taken up Vaishnavism in his own particular culture. So in other words, he was a follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was chanting Hare Krishna, but he's still reading the Quran and adhering to the tenets of the Islamic tradition. So when these ritualistic brahmanas saw this, that the Vaishnavas, who were from Brahmin families generally, they were discussing with this, you know, Yavana, isn't it? Outcast. They became shocked, and they thought, well, these Vaishnavas are off the wall, as they say. So in order to really prove that the Vaishnavas were off the wall, they thought, let's call the best brahmanas in the community to defeat them, to show them they're associating with malechas and Yavanas, and they really don't understand the philosophy. So they called for all these different Vidyaratna people. Yeah, those of you who know Sanskrit, Vidyaratna means jewel of learning. Vidya means learning or knowledge, and Ratna means jewel. So anyway, they called for all these different people with all these different titles to defeat the Vaishnavas. And it was decided, of course, the Vaishnavas were not interested in an argument at all. But when these ritualistic brahmanas started to offend the Vaishnavas decided, no, we have to defeat their philosophy. Otherwise, we're not interested in just talking with these people. So they assigned this one devotee, whose name was Vaishnava Das, to have the argument or discussion, whatever, with these ritualistic brahmanas. And so Vaishnava Das is a very interesting person because previously, he was a Mayavadi sannyasi, and he had been chanting in Varanasi, and a Vaishnava went by him while he was, not chanting, but he was meditating. While he was meditating, and he heard the holy names from this Vaishnava, and he came still alive, and he ran to a Mayapur and actually took initiation from the Vaishnavas there. So anyway, but because he was chosen to argue or have the discussion with these ritualistic brahmanas because he was trained up in Vedanta. You know, he's the most expert in all of the Vedanta literatures. So anyway, so he starts talking to them. It's a very interesting discussion. And they say that, how can you allow someone who is an outcast, you know, basically outside the Vedic culture, to associate with you. Generally, it says that if you have someone who is not in the Vedic culture, even if you see their face, you're supposed to run to the Ganges without even changing your clothes and jump in, you know, immediately. Or some of the injunctions are, you're supposed to look at the sun, you know, until your eyes get burnt or something. Anyway, all these weird, interesting injunctions. So how could you have this discussion with them? And then the Vaishnava Das presents to them that these are actually devotees of the Lord. They're engaged in what's called paramarthika dharma, means transcendental dharma, which transcends varnashram. He admits that, yes, I'm getting to the point in a second. He admits that, yes, they are not qualified to be ritualistic brahmanas or do fire sacrifices or anything like that. But they're more qualified because they're engaged in bhakti. So then the question is raised. We thought one can only become qualified by executing, this is the ritualistic brahmanas talking, by executing sukriti, you know, pious activities. Kriti means meritorious or activities. Su means very meritorious activities. So they said, we thought, and Vaishnava Das says yes, but there's two types of meritorious activities. One type is naimittika dharma. In other words, ordinary, materialistic, pious activities, like the brahmanas have their sanja rites, and other things like that, you know, feeding the poor and other stuff like that. And there's another type of sukriti, which is called nitya. Oh, you've read Jivadharma, so you're familiar with the story.
But when you say this, it's...
Yeah, you remember the story. Which is nitya dharma. You know, there's anitya and nitya, or nitya sukriti. So it's nitya sukriti. So by doing those activities, one actually becomes qualified for bhakti. There's a whole discussion going on back and forth. So in other words, so the question is raised, what is that nitya sukriti, or how does one get that bhakti? And it turns out that the actual nitya sukriti for getting the bhakti is, as we hear, Ramanda Brahmate Kondam Bhagavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Pish, by associating and serving devotees. And that's how one gets the initial seed of bhakti, which is described as shraddha. And so the word shraddha is translated in English most of the times as faith, but really means more than that. Like you have shraddha, so you take the S away, it's like you get rid. It means heart giving, which is interesting. You understand? Shraddha. Yeah. Like crit da or shraddha. You see how the word is formed like that? So one gets that shraddha, the initial stage of devotional service, the bhakti lata bij planted in the heart, by doing nitya sukriti, which means serving or associating with a great Vaishnava. So the point is how to cultivate, the question you raised was how to cultivate that seed. First one must have that faith, which incidentally is not just in the mind, you know, I believe. It's actually heart faith. It's a connection in the heart. And of course we know from the Bhagavatam, Yashasthi Bhakti Bhagavati Kinshana Savaragunas Tetra Samasate Suva. Another verse I was going to quote. One who has implicit faith. Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavati Kitchena Sarvajagana. So one who has implicit faith in the Guru and in the Vedic literatures, everything's revealed to one. So this faith, of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also describes faith as Shraddha Shabde Vishashakahe Sudrida Nishya, that implicit trust that simply doing what Krishna wants, everything is accomplished. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that this shraddha leads or is very much connected with sharanagati, you know, surrender. That's another word, too. that's often misunderstood. Sharanagati means basically not so much the English word surrender, it means like giving oneself or going. You understand? Mind, body, words. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes from Lord Chaitanya's six principles of surrender, you know, accepting everything favorable, rejecting everything unfavorable, always understanding the Lord is protecting you, always understanding the Lord is maintaining you, having no separate interests than the Lord's service, and the final one is being meek and humble, the six surrendering principles. So in other words, this initial faith that one has, or trust, or giving one's heart, develops by the process of surrender, or sharanagati, and that's actually how you cultivate bhakti, by that process of sharanagati. It can't be something external. Devotional service is performed with the subtle body, the mind, the heart, like that. And if you're simply doing it externally, because this is a topic I've spoken about quite often recently, then it's niyamagraha. It's actually not devotional service. It's actually ritualistic behavior, not with the not having the right intention while you're doing the ritualistic behavior. So the whole idea is to give one's heart to Krishna. And one does that, one gets that bhakti from association with a pure devotee. And that's how you cultivate bhakti. Isn't it? Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi. Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. So, that answers the question.
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
So, who else has a question? Yes?
Shakurudev, I'm wondering now that we have a small child, it's easy. You know, in her case, you can kind of keep with us when we are practicing Krishna conscious activities, but often we see that they, at least when the children are getting teenagers, then they are not interested anymore. So I'm just wondering.
Okay. So, one of the reasons that children are not interested when they become teenagers is because they were pretty much forced to perform bhakti when they were young. In other words, they were doing it against their will. I've seen many times, in India, that the parents would bring their kids to me to touch my feet or something like that, and they'll push the poor kid's head down, almost like child abuse. "You're not touching his feet!" So, there's that tendency to force the child to participate in devotional service. And usually what you're forced to do when you're young, you won't want to do when you get older. So that's the first reason. There's other reasons, too. Another reason for the kids not being interested in Krishna consciousness is association. When they develop friendship with people who are not interested in Krishna consciousness or do other things, then they, in order to fit in, they take on the qualities of the people that they're associating with. And so, to cut the discussion short, my solution for that is to give the children role models. Because children and adults, they function on the basis of role models. Someone they can admire, someone they want to be like. For example, you know, I look at Srila Prabhupada, or I admire Srila Prabhupada, and I'm thinking, you know, I'd like to be like that. And that's really what keeps me going. I mean, of course, we have the best philosophy, the best practices, but we need some concrete example that inspires us. So, the kids give up Krishna consciousness because their examples that inspire them are less than desirable. So, if we can imbibe in the children an admiration for maybe other people their same age who are Krishna conscious, or Srila Prabhupada, or some great saintly persons, then it's more likely they'll be Krishna conscious. There's another reason that people, at least sometimes the girls, they don't take up Krishna consciousness, they fall in love with someone who is not Krishna conscious. You in love? You know about that, Gopinath? Fall in love. So the problem with falling in love, and I'm not speaking just as a sannyasi, the problem with it is that one loses their sense of discrimination, both the men and women. It's the doctors or the radiologists say it's the brain scan is the same as one who takes cocaine. So,
in other words, it makes one stupid.
Yeah, very stupid. Mm. It's better to talk on a mobile phone while you're driving a car. It's safer. And you make decisions that impact the rest of your life without thinking about it. So, I've seen, in many cases, you know, that happens, that someone will fall in love with someone who's not Krishna conscious, and they're gradually taken away from Krishna consciousness. We had one disciple like that in New Zealand. You remember her, right? I don't mention her name. So that's another reason. The basic point is that the parents should set a very good example of Krishna consciousness. That doesn't mean they're just strict. That's not what I'm talking about, good example. Good example means they're happy, they're compassionate, they're loving, they're accepting, and that's connected to Krishna consciousness. If they're just strict, that's not going to do it. Like I've seen some parents who raise their children very strict and doing their deity worship, for example, and if the child goes near them while they're attempting to do deity worship, they'll say to the child, "You're muchi. Stay away." So the child, being completely non-philosophical or unphilosophical, will hear that statement of "You're muchi" as "I reject you." So I think if the parents are loving and take the service to the child as their first priority and set a good example of what Krishna consciousness is, not simply being strict and arguing with each other all the time, which happens so often. It's not you, of course. But then the children will feel sheltered in the parents. And they're more likely to be Krishna conscious. Of course, it's always up to the living entity's free will, isn't it? Someone can choose to be Krishna conscious and someone cannot choose to be Krishna conscious. But I've seen a lot of our second generation in ISKCON, let's say, leaving Krishna consciousness or rejecting Krishna consciousness because of traumatic experiences in the past. I mean, I was just with one disciple in Sweden, and her two children, you know, some of you Rupa, you may know or not know her. Anyway, her two children, or actually three children, she had a son, anyway, who left his body. You know about that. And she has two daughters who don't want anything to do with Krishna consciousness. Because they were put in this situation in a gurukul where they weren't treated well and separated from the parents. So they actually connect Krishna consciousness with the trauma. So we want the children to connect Krishna consciousness, you know, with love and happiness and fun and all those other nice things. Men should always be voluntary. There should be no force about it. You shouldn't make her chant rounds right now. Where's your beads? Where's your beads, kid?
Maharaj, what about the importance of Garbhodhana Samskara?
Yeah, I mean, that's important. But my understanding is the nurture is more important than nature. There's two things. Nature is what you're born with. And, you know, my parents, I guess they did Garbhodhana Samskara. Maybe they ran around the bed 50 times or something like that. You know, who knows? You know. Anyway. No, I mean, actually my parents were pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, neither of them had any relationships before they got married, so they were really good parents. So, but still, I mean, they weren't praying for a ray of Vishnu. They probably got a ray of Ravana or something. you know, they definitely weren't praying for a raise. Vishnu, they probably praying for a businessman or a, what else?
Scientist.
A scientist or a doctor.
Doctor. You
know. Please, my dear Lord, send a doctor. That's why I'm interested in medicine. So, but still, somehow or other, by Prabhupada's association, I'm here today. And so then you see the opposite occurring in many instances. Krishna himself had a son, Bhoma, by the earth planet, and he was a good kid, really good, but then he had bad association. What happened? Krishna had to kill him. Had to kill his own son. Pretty bad, isn't it? With the permission of his wife. And other instances too, like you had these two nice gorillas, Dvidvita gorilla and Minda. They were actually assisting Lord Ramchandra in his pastimes. They were very close to Lord Ramchandra. And by association, they became demoniac, and Balaram had to kill them because Dvidvita was trying to, you know, basically steal Balaram's girlfriends from him and harass them in many ways. So here you see instances of people were devotees or even born as devotees, and then by bad association, they leave it. So, you know, question of Garbhana and Sanskara, yes, it's good. Obviously, you know, pray for a proper soul to take birth in the womb, it's a nice idea. But at the same time, I think nurture is more important. Isn't it?
Yeah. And what about education? I'm just thinking that doesn't this apply to us, you know, bigger children also, that we take distance from devotees often because of ignorance and we do things without understanding why we are doing, like you said, that they force the children to bow down for you without explaining why we do things, and in the case of adults at least, it's important to understand why we do things.
I mean, if adults are forced to do things ritualistically, then they'll lose a taste after some time. And unfortunately, as our movement progresses, we add more and more rituals. And it's not like we're not following the KISS philosophy anymore. You know the KISS philosophy? Keep it simple, sadhu. Not keep it simple, stupid. Keep it simple, sadhu. You know, Prabhupada made things very, very simple for us. And now, things have become much more complex. And, I mean, even like, you know, deity worship, everything's becoming much more complex in our movement. I mean, when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was the head pujari after 2 weeks in the movement. I'm not sure you have Radha Krishna deities. But still, it was very simple. And there was a lot of room for upward mobility. And the stress was more on preaching and reaching out rather than adding like levels of complexity to Krishna consciousness. And therefore, pretty much we knew what we were doing, why we were doing, when we were doing it. And when you add these levels of complexity, you tend to forget why you're doing something, or you tend to put yourself on what I call automatic pilot. You know, you're just like, you're doing it. You know, wake me up when my rounds are done or something. Or, you know, what we offer obeisances, we're not really aware of what obeisances mean. Or when we say the Prashanam prayer, I mean, as I go around the world, I ask people if they know the meaning of the Prashanam prayer, and at least 60 to 70% of people don't know the meaning, even though they're saying it every day, at least 2-3 times a day. So it tends to disconnect people, and then you sort of like feel forced into doing something that's not really from your heart. Devotional service is supposed to be executed from the heart. I mean, you have that one devotee who Lord Chaitanya came across who was illiterate, and he was simply crying, picking up the Bhagavad Gita and basically looking at the pictures or whatever. He was doing mispronouncing the words. And Lord Chaitanya said, "You're the real knower of the Bhagavad Gita." even though he probably wouldn't have passed any Bhakti Shastri tests, right? Because he understood the internal mood in the Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna has become the chariot driver of Arjuna. God has actually become the servant of his devotee and exchanging what we call ras with his devotee. So, yeah. So, you know, adults also can lose a taste. And also we lose a taste because of offenses against Vaishnavas. That's another reason. So, does that answer the question? Yes, no? Yes, okay. Who else has a question? Yes, Radha.
Based on what Mataji had asked earlier...
Mataji,
Praveen.
I have this thing about Matajis, you know. Because everybody uses the word Mataji, 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 Mataji. I'd rather people use proper names, you know. Did I ever call you Mataji? Maybe in jest.
Probably.
Yes, sometimes. So, based upon...
And then, yes, and also with my nephews around now, I wonder if, like, we get tested in our devotional life. So do children also get tested?
Tested?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Up to a certain age. I mean, before a certain age, no. Because they don't have that discrimination.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, I would say the more ability you have to discriminate, the more you're going to get tested. So if someone doesn't have the ability to discriminate, I don't think an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, even 12 or 13, has much ability to discriminate. I think the tests are there for someone who can discriminate. Why should a child be tested? Poor kid, you know. Isn't it? If you think about it, you know, why should an 8-year-old kid be tested? Were you tested when you were 8 years?
Don't think so.
No. No, you grew up happy. Now, why are you Krishna conscious?
My parents made it fun.
You made it fun for me. She has nice parents, devotee parents. And what age did you take initiation at?
I think it was 16.
Because you took initiation at an early age. And your sister before you? Was it before?
Before
you, yeah. So both her and her sister are actually initiated good devotees, fully serving the Supreme Personality of God with their lives. So there's a success case, right? And, you know, you went to regular school and everything,
yes.
Right?
There was no Gurukul.
There's no Gurukul. So she went to what we call
Slaughterhouse
School. Slaughterhouse. Yeah. She didn't get slaughtered.
She works there now also.
She works at a slaughterhouse. And so she didn't get slaughtered because she loves her parents. Her parents set a good example. And they were very loving with you all the time and accepting and not condemning you.
They let us do, they gave us free will.
Yeah, they gave you free will. They didn't condemn you or, you know, torture you or anything like that.
They made chanting fun, actually.
They made chanting fun.
Yeah. It was a game.
So there's an example. She's a second generation. Actually, third generation. Third generation devotee. And she's happy. And she's married.
Are you sure that your parents gave you free will, not Krishna?
Yeah,
or maybe your parents are... Your father is Krishna.
No, she has a nice father, a nice mother, and they really love their children. They took care of them nicely. And that's the secret. Right? So, and I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement because my parents told me not to join. My parents were very controlling. And my mother said, and you've heard me tell this story before, my mother said, you have to become a doctor. And I said to her, why? She said, your business is to serve me. And I said, why? And she said, because you're my son. I said, why? You know, because of that pressure, you know, I was able to rebel. So I'm, you know, I'm in the opposite side, I guess, of the whole scheme, that I was rebelling to become a devotee. And so we don't want people who are born in Krishna conscious families to rebel, to become whatever. Oh my God. She's chanting. So any questions? Other questions?
Oh, yes. I had a question. We're going out, and we, like you said in the early days, it was the focus was on mainly on sharing and preaching Krishna consciousness.
Sharing, preaching, and deepening one's own Krishna consciousness and Krishna katha. You know, hearing, chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. You know, the nine processes of devotional service.
I was wondering, someone recently, I've heard someone was doing Bhakti Riksha programs at home.
Yeah.
And then another person came and he said, basically, you know, you don't really have Krishna, what are you going to give them? So then I was wondering, you know, if we're preaching like that, you know, we don't really have Krishna ourselves. So
why don't we have Krishna? We have Krishna's holy names. Prabhupada has given us the Shudanam, the holy names of Krishna. And we can give. I mean, obviously you don't preach above the level of your realization. It's not you should just start talking about Krishna and the gopis right now. The interesting thing, well, actually I had an interesting realization about people who speak a lot about the gopis and Krishna and everything like that. It's not to criticize them. But are they actually thinking of serving?
Enjoying.
That's the point. Yeah. You know, someone says, well, I really enjoy hearing about Krishna and the gopis. But the gopis' mood, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and actually if you read the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you really can understand that mood, is whatever it takes to give Krishna pleasure will do. Actually, there's a statement by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of the gopis that even if my misery, so to speak, I'm paraphrasing, gives Krishna pleasure, then my misery is my pleasure. In other words, so that's the mood of the gopis. It's not just like a, you know, a fancy dance, Nivasa dance. It's not just a fancy dance or a romantic story. And if you're approaching, this is an interesting realization, if you're approaching the relationship between Radha and Krishna in the mood of Shantaras, Shantaras means to admire. You understand? If you're, and that's the way most people approach it. It's actually we'll go Rasapas. It's an improper mixture. You understand what I'm talking about?
You're not there yet, to actually.
No, you're not. That's not the mood. It's not a question of there or not there. The mood is, you know, seva, service. See, the point is that what makes the gopis very special is not that they're just like nice-looking ladies who attract Krishna. What makes the gopis very special is that their mood of seva has, let's say, increased to the utmost degree. That's really what makes them special. Because they're willing, as we know, willing to go to hell to cure Krishna's headache. Remember the story of Narada Muni? Nobody else would give the dust from their feet except for the gopis. And they were willing to just give Krishna happiness even if it meant, you know, going to hell or suffering as a result of that. So to me, that's the topmost understanding of service. Right? So unless one has that mood, one cannot understand the gopis at all. And if you approach the conjugal loving affairs of Radha and Krishna simply as an admirer,